My name is Robert Nicholas DeFinis, better known by my nickname Rocky. I'm from Philadelphia originally and lived in Lansdale now for 44 years. I was drafted after the war ended in October of 45. And sometime around March of 1974, I read about Mr. Woods, the defense counsel for Private Eddie Slovic, and the movie was coming out, The Execution of Private Slovic. And by some coincidence of chance, I met Mr. Woods about 4 days later in the Acme Market. I happened to have on my son's Lansdale Catholic jacket on, and Mr. Woods approached me, and he said that his son went to Lansdale Catholic, and I said, that was nice. And he extended his hand and said, I'm Ed Woods. And I said, well, you're the person who defended Private Slovic. He said, yeah. I said, well, there's a movie coming on about it. He said, well, would you like to see it with me? I said, absolutely. And this is how we forge our relationship. And we sat there and viewed the movie together.
Private Eddie D. Slovic, these are the findings of this court. Of specification one of the charge, guilty. Of specification two of the charge, guilty. You are hereby sentenced to be dishonorably discharged, to forfeit all pay and allowances due or to become due, and to be shot to death with musketry. This court is now adjourned.
At the end of the movie, he questioned what I thought about it. And I asked him where the story was, because I didn't see what I was looking for. What struck me was they gave a lot of the background, but didn't present anything about the trial per se. Who said what and what kind of rebuttal was there and how they chose to shoot one person out of so many who deserted and received the death sentence. And we chatted to about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And that's where the story started.
Jesus, if I had to quit tonight, never know if I was wrong or right. That's just what you get.
You got to go the distance if you want to fight a good fight.
I thought he was a nice-looking young man, intelligent. He was not schooled, where did he go, the seventh grade, I think. But he was a good thinker, and he was just adamant about not going up to the front. And I tried to persuade him, as soldier to soldier, to at least give it a try, but he wanted no parts of it. My name is Edward Patrick Woods. I'm 83 years of age and reside in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. And I've been a resident of Montgomery County for my entire adult life, except that spent in the service on active duty.
It's all about combat conditions. They're killing each other a mile and a half away. The bombs are going off. Our guys are dying. These other guys, they're all officers. It's a cut and dry case as far as they're concerned. This guy confessed. He didn't move out with Zaffa. It's desertion. We're going to shoot him, period. I'm 40 minutes to make up your mind. Today they get appeals for 10 years, 20 years. Okay, this is Army rules. And our Army rules said that he was qualified to be a defense counsel. And that's what he did.
I joined the 28th Infantry Division from Scranton in 1937 at the age of 19 as a private. And they needed an infantry officer to command the 28th MP Company, and I was made an active military police officer. I was only an MP for a very short while, and then I ended up at division headquarters. We had this sergeant who wanted to court-martial this cook for stealing this can of beans, and I ended up helping him prepare the papers. I had never had experience with the courts, per se. And lo and behold, I was appointed the investigating officer. I did such a thorough job, it came to the attention of the Judge Advocate General. He arrived on the 13th, and on the 16th, he appoints this general court. I think already they were looking for a scapegoat. So that's how I became defense counsel for the general court. And we had, I guess 30 or more cases, and they were mostly for desertion. And one such case, the next to my last, was Private Slovak.
This happened to be a unique case where one was chosen for some reason, because he might have been Polish, Catholic, or whatever. He was chosen, shot, and covered up. Might as well have left it up to him. They should have shot the 49 and put it in the newspaper, Stars and Stripes. There would have been no more desertions, I guarantee you. He didn't get a fair trial. And now we're seeking a pardon that I think he should get after 50-some years.
There was no requirement that anybody be a lawyer at that time. Now both the prosecutor and defense counsel must be lawyers. I didn't tell them that they should get a lawyer. I was following a lawful order. I didn't ask for the job. And why I was picked, I don't know. But I wasn't going to say to General Cota, I'm not going to do it. I think I did a good job. Nobody likes to lose, you know. But I never fretted when I lost. And I didn't really fret about this case until afterwards.
They're sending me over the ocean. They are sending me over the sea. They are sending me over the ocean. 'Cause the army can't do without me. Call out, call out, call out the goddamn reserves, reserves. Call out, call out, call out the goddamn reserves.
February 7th, 1944. Honey, let's pray the baby looks like me. I think it will. If anything happens to you, I'll go AWOL. And that's just what I feel like doing now. This joint is worse than a rat hole. The food is terrible. The work is tough. But I'll get back to you no matter what happens. The name of the town we are near is Mineral Wells, Texas. You can find it on the map, and you'll see just how far I am from you.
There's a picture of his whole outfit. And Private Slovak is the one with the low cuts. He couldn't wear boots because of his feet and bow legs.
February 28th, 1944. I just got off the rifle range, and my ears are still ringing, so my writing is very poor because I am nervous. You said you were down to the Red Cross, and you want me to go to my commanding officer. I'll try and see him tomorrow. I'll let you know in my next letter what he said. Keep your fingers crossed. You know what my chances are in anything. I always have the bad luck, and I'll probably have bad luck in trying to get a discharge. You know, honey, that everything happens to me. I never get a break.
The United States or any branch of the military will not admit that they made a mistake. That's standard procedure.
March 1st, 1944. I just got off the rifle range and my score was bad, but I don't care. When I got down there to shoot, I was scared. I tried to tell them that I was nervous, but they made me shoot anyway. Every time I would shoot, I would close my eyes and jump, and when I would do that, I would miss my target. You should have seen my score. I don't think I'll pass, and I don't care. I'm not trying to be a good soldier. I want a discharge, and if I don't get home soon, I'll go crazy.
The captain of the boot training, which Private Slip was, he came up and testified and said his name was not combat material. I want them discharged. They said no. I want them moved to a garrison unit, which is non-combat. They said no. He was 4F. 4F is unfit for military service.
April 2nd, 1944. Remember, darling, when I said we were up for examination? Well, they put me in class 1A. That means I'm fit for overseas duty. I wouldn't mind it if I could just know that I was coming back.
When the investigating officer, who in most cases is a captain, major maybe, I never remember any of them being a lieutenant colonel, but this guy is not only a lieutenant colonel, he's a West Pointer, and he's the investigating officer. So you know that they're going to nail this kid.
July 7th, 1944. I'm awfully fond of you this morning, but I have to tell you there isn't much of my life left to live. My life is short, and you have made it sweet. By the 1st of August, I'll be overseas. But I'm going to die, and you'll marry some other man. Before I die, I'll whisper, darling, I love you. I'll only pray that you can find a man who will love you like I did, and who will treat you as good as I tried to.
There's nothing more damning than a confession. That's what the reason the cops rubber hose the guys, whether they did it or not, they want a confession. That's the worst evidence you can get. He wrote it on a tissue-like flower ordering thing from the PX that you could send flowers home. And that's what this was written on, and to see his handwriting there.
October 9th, 1944. I, Private Eddie D. Slovic, confessed to the desertion of the United States Army. At the time of my desertion, we were in Albuf in France. I come to Albuf as a replacement. They were shelling the town, and we were told to dig in for the night. The following morning, they were shelling us again. I was so scared, nerves and trembling, that at the time the other replacements moved out, I couldn't move. I stayed there in my foxhole till it was quiet. Next morning, I turned myself over to the Canadian Provost Corps. After being with them for 6 weeks, I was turned over to American MP. I told my commanding officer my story. I said that if I had to go out there again, I'd run away. He said there was nothing he could do for me, so I ran away. And I'll run away again if I have to go out there. Signed, Private Eddie D. Slovic, ASN 3689-6415.
And there is an injustice here. That's probably the biggest problem here. Murderers get off. Rapists get off. Embezzlers get off. Why can't you pardon somebody who's dead? For 134 years, the only one shot. I don't understand it.
October 23rd, 1944. I guess you're wondering how come I am writing my mail on Red Cross paper. Well, darling, I'm in a little trouble. And I've been working for the Red Cross for the past 2 weeks, and that's where I'm getting my paper. Please don't worry about me, because I'm all right. I'm only worried about what they're going to do to me. Please, I beg you to wait for me. I'll let you know just as soon as I know how much time I get. If it's too much, then I'll ask you to get a divorce. I won't have you waiting 3 or 4 years for me. It seems to me, my darling, that I've always been in trouble. Everything happens to me. I've never had a streak of luck in my life. The only luck I had in my life was when I married you. I knew it wouldn't last because I was too happy. I knew they wouldn't let me be happy. I only pray to the Lord to help me and you, my love.
My interpretation of a pardon is that it must be accepted by the person. And I think that that is as opposed to a rejection. Now, he already shows remorse in this letter to Eisenhower.
December 9th, 1944. Dear General Eisenhower, I, Private Eddie D. Slovic, ASN 3689-6415, was convicted on the 11th day of November, year 1944, Armistice Day, by general court-martial to be shot to death for desertion of the United States Army.
He says he didn't understand what desertion meant. Well, he may not have understood, because desertion is like homicide. It's a very complicated thing. It's all in the intent.
Because I feared hazardous duty to myself, and because of my nerves. I have some awful bad nerves, which no doubt in my mind we all have. How can I tell you how humbly sorry I am for the sins I've committed? I didn't realize at the time what I was doing, or what the word desertion meant. What is it like to be condemned to die? I beg of you, deeply and sincerely, for the sake of my dear wife and mother back home, to have mercy on me. To my knowledge, I have a good record since my marriage and as a soldier. I'd like to continue to be a good soldier. Anxiously awaiting your reply, which I earnestly pray is favorable. God bless you in your work for victory. I remain yours in victory, Private Eddie D. Slovic.
When I first deserted, I thought myself free. Till my cruel comrade informed against me. I was quickly followed after and brought back with speed. I was handcuffed and guarded, heavy irons put on me. court-martial, court-martial, then quickly was got, and the sentence passed upon me that I was to be shot. May the Lord have mercy on them for their sad cruelty.
My name's Robert J. Hall. I live in Drexel Hill, Pennsylvania, which is approximately 2 miles outside of the western edge of the city of Philadelphia. And I was in the 28th Division at the time. My job after we got overseas, or right before we went overseas, was assistant division engineer of the 28th Division. And I was still pretty young. In fact, as I was about just about almost a year older than Slovak. And my only assignment really was to assist finding a location to perform the execution. And it was much to my surprise. You think of Alsace-Lorraine as being southern France. The snows were worse there than they were any place else that we had been up in Germany. In fact, as we got so much snow at the execution area that we had to use mules or pack trains to take supplies to the infantrymen. I think it was San Marino Mines was the name of the town, which wasn't too far out of Colmar, but it was a private estate. It had a wall around it, but it was a stone in the back. And of course, we had to be prepared for ricochets and things. So one of the jobs was to get a backstop to prevent if the bullets went through. There wasn't much liability of hitting the stone and bouncing back and hitting some of the witnesses. And the other one was to get a board, because most people would come out, you know, a nervous wreck going to their execution. Slovak wasn't a nervous wreck. I think he was the calmest person at the execution, to tell you the truth. But much to my surprise, once the place was all fixed up, Coda knew me very well. And out of a clear blue sky, why, he said, Hummel, you'll be volunteering as an official witness, which I didn't feel like saying, hey, General, I just assumed not be an official witness. But it made sense because I was also in charge of getting the people back in to clear the place up and make it look as much like it was before it all started. In fact, there was enough snow on the ground while I had the men there, while we cleared a path to get up to the stake and around the stake and clear the spot where the firing squads could stand to do the job. And he came out and he found he didn't have to use the board. So the MPs, they both had the job of tying them to the post and such thing. And then the firing squad came up, lined up, and they fired. And despite all the death that I had seen to that time, it's different when you know it's your own men all involved. Parts of the cords were cut. The body leaned over, and when the doctor, Dr. Ruslow, started to move up to the scene to make sure that he was dead with the stethoscope and all that stuff, the body moved. Then we had to go through this whole thing about the regular procedure to confiscate the weapons, because it was always one blank amongst the firing squad, and had to give the order for a reload. And I thought, my God, I can't go through, because you could see parts of the body had been hit the first time. You know he was hit. And finally, Dr. Ruslow started to move up, but every step that he took on that frozen ground made a noise, a definite noise. Noisy, and it was so quiet, you can't imagine. There were considerable people at that thing. They came from all over, Army headquarters and everything. And a number of infantrymen were there. But fortunately, I had my rosary beads in my pocket. I can remember that. And I was saying rosary beads. And boy, it was pretty hard to avoid really saying them when you were afraid you were going to have to fire again. And before you know it, it was all over.
but I'm out.